You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Australia is known for being record breakers in technology and other fields, but some of the records we hold are for the wrong reasons. We're being branded as fast adopters of new technology, which in turn suggests we understand how the technology we're using works. And as a result, we do tend to push it as hard as we can. This is probably a good thing. But when it comes to local television networks preventing us from seeing what the rest of the world is seeing, Australians are very quick to jump online and download what we're missing. It's high time television networks in this country took a look at their business models, because as the world of high-speed internet grows, revenue from advertising is sure to diminish as consumers turn to the online world to download the legal or illegal copies of television shows. A classic example of this is the TV show Lost, which screened in Australia on the 7 Network. As soon as this program aired in the United States, pirated copies appeared on peer-to-peer file-sharing sites around the world. With the aid of a search engine, it isn't too hard to track them down. If you're not aware of this, on a fast ADSL2 internet connection, a one-hour TV program can download in a couple of minutes, and without ads. If TV stations in Australia don't become more adaptive to scheduling a new TV series at the same time it airs in other countries, this will only continue to happen and undermine their revenue. The internet is the single biggest threat to television in this country, not only by downloaders, but by everyone who seeks entertainment. In the last 12 months, TV audiences in Australia have declined by 7%, and this will only increase if the networks don't wake up. Globally, young men in the 16 to 30 age group watch less than 27 minutes of TV per day. This means advertisers targeting that market only have 2 TV commercial breaks per day. Don't think they haven't noticed. As a result, online advertising will continue to grow. Have you noticed? The 7 Network has just announced the rollout of TiVo, a personal video recorder which is subscription-based and that allows you to fast-forward the ads. They will have electronic control over what you watch, albeit on their network or others. This in itself prompts many questions. So where's it all going? What will the role of commercial free-to-air television in Australia be in 5 years' time? One thing's for sure. The San Andreas fault line of electronic delivery of entertainment to consumers is about to see a major earthquake. Some media empires will now have a new ocean view, and others will meet the same fate as Atlantis.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
MySpace TV takes on YouTube. Adam Turner meets British telecoms boss to compare notes about Telstra's rollout of broadband. Tech buyers say iPhone is 2.1.0. Wireless broadband stoush looms for the bush. Spectators snap up iPhone domains. And Telstra's competitors get a rent reduction. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple's iPhone is go for launch, Microsoft enters the online storage market, one-third of US teenagers experience cyberbullying, Communications Minister speculates on new digital TV channels, and Japanese scientists control gadgets with brain activity. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In one of the most anticipated product launches in consumer electronics for years, Apple's much-hyped iPhone went on sale in the United States on Friday last week at 6 p.m. in each time zone. Apple shops and AT&T outlets across the United States opened their doors to long lines of Apple fans, eager to be among the first to own the prestigious GSM telephone sporting integrated email, web browsing, and the trademark iPod music player. The iPhone also uses Apple's new multi-touch technology, which allows users to tap, flick, and pinch their commands onto its touch-sensitive glass screen. The 4GB model is retailing for $499, while the 8GB model is available for $599. The iPhone was unveiled in January this year when Apple chief Steve Jobs declared that the company hoped to claim a 1% share of the worldwide market of 1 billion mobile phones over the next 12 months. The iPhone is due to debut in Europe later this year and Asia in 2008. Microsoft has turned up the heat on Google and Yahoo by announcing its plans to commission a new online web storage service. Microsoft said it will be introducing test versions of two new free services, Windows Live Folders and Windows Live Photo Gallery. Chris Jones, Microsoft's corporate vice president, said the new online storage service will be launched later this year, but that the company's goal was to stitch together the existing disparate Windows Live services and offer a more unified experience. Windows Live Folders will provide up to 500 megabytes of online storage, while Windows Live Photo Gallery will provide a similar service to the popular Flickr site, where users can share photos and other graphics online. IT Wire reported last week that about 32% of teenage internet users in the United States say they have been subjected to cyberbullying. A report from the Pew Internet and American Life Project says this most commonly involves sending threatening or aggressive messages or posting embarrassing pictures. While victims were more likely to be older girls, social network and daily internet users, the report noted that a majority of respondents thought bullying and harassment happened a lot more in real life than online. The report comes after the launch last week of yet another video-sharing website aimed at teens, MySpaceTV.com. In direct competition with Google's YouTube, MySpace TV is still in beta test and will feature video charts, channels and categories in a similar format to existing social networking and content-sharing services. Minister for Communications, Information Technology and the Arts, Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan, told the National Press Club last week that the Australian Communications and Media Authority would soon publish a revised timetable for the auction of two new digital television channels. The Ready, Get Set, Go Digital Action Plan was announced by Senator Coonan in November last year and outlines the next steps in the conversion of Australian television from analogue to digital. The action plan lists two additional television channels for new digital services, intended to enhance the uptake of digital TV in Australia. The so-called Channel A is intended as a free-to-air, digital-only service with capacity to broadcast up to 8 new channels, providing datacasting and narrowcasting services. The so-called Channel B could include television content delivered to handheld mobile devices and could carry as many as 30 new channel streams of mobile television using the DVB-H standard. Senator Coonan last week announced that the new channels would fill two unallocated lots of spectrum and that the ACMA would shortly be publishing a timetable for these channels to be auctioned. And forget the mouse and keyboard to control your computer. Japanese scientists have developed a new technology which could let you control electronic devices without lifting a finger, simply by reading brain activity. Hitachi in Tokyo has developed the Brain Machine Interface, which analyzes slight changes in the brain's blood flow and translates these changes into electrical signals. In a demonstration of the new technology, subjects were able to control the movement of a toy train set by wearing a cap connected by optical fibers to a control computer and motor. Commercial uses of the technology could be replacing remote controls and keyboards and helping disabled people to operate electric wheelchairs, beds, or even artificial limbs. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
A lot of these media organisations are trying to get the edge. They're actually starting to mix blogs with news.
And that's where things...
And that's where things are going awfully wrong.
That's how I read it. Is that how you read it?
No. What he's done the right thing. He's gone out there and said, hey, this is really crap.
Did the big bad internet do an evil thing and make a good journalist, Adam, write a bad piece?
No, not at all.
No.
With new Office 2007, you can see sometimes 50 to 75% reduction in
the size of the document when it's saved.
There's been a lot of face pulling and gurning in the studio here this evening.
There's already an open standard. Why did the other one have to come into existence?
We can now see the technical cocky on the forum.
Yes.
He had problems with his avatar, did he?
He had problems with his cocky, yeah.
But it's all good now.
Cocky found his cracker.
Yes. Oh, it's hardly throwing away the key, but...
51 months, what's that, four and a bit years? He'll be out in a year.
Put a dent in your social life, that's for sure.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very hello to all of you, wherever you might be listening to Tech Talk Radio, around this wonderful, fairly wet, damp country. Well, especially down here in the southern states. Probably nice summery days up north, I would imagine. We should move, don't you think, boys? Tonight, the panel consists of Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. How are we all?
Good day, Andrew. Good day, Mark.
Look, yes, it's good. Good. I think technology is working for me. The financial year has since ended. Can I confess now? I've gone to Vista. On a laptop.
When did that happen?
The tax man gave me incentive to go and buy a laptop, so I thought, well, I better. And, of course, the only thing you can basically buy on a laptop these days is Vista, unless you want some antiquated, you know, old box which they had lying around with XP on it.
It's getting increasingly harder.
No, I had one. I had the choice. I could take either, and I took XP.
Did you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know if you could do it. That was probably 4 weeks ago, I think, I bought it. And I went the XP option and knowing that everything was going to work on it. And from others who are talking about Vista said that they've got the problems with, you know, not the driver's not written for it, but at least in Vista there is an option to go off and find it, like, automatically. It actually does it for you automatically. And
can I just say that Vista, so far, so good. I've had a fairly uneventful... transition, I guess, is probably the word for it. I bought two laptops, one for a colleague and one for my wife. My wife is using it to her best of her ability with Word, and that's probably about it, really. So we haven't had any problems at this point. But it did connect into the network quite well, so I was happy about that.
And which Word?
Word 2003. I've got Word 2007, but I wasn't going to throw a new operating system and a new word processing software at it. I think that was just a tad unfair. But suffice to say, I think the transition across to the new operating system so far has been good. There's a little panel. I don't know whether you're familiar with Vista at all. You're probably not, because I wasn't. I found this by mistake. My Vista experience out of 10 is 2.
What does that mean? Your satisfaction
level? I don't know. What does
level?
That mean?
Does Vista tell you, does it, what your experience level is?
If you're running Vista on 10 out of 10, that means you need to have a computer that hasn't been invented yet, so that it can do all the lovely graphic interface and GUI and stuff like that.
The AeroGlass interface.
Yeah, that's the one. Mm. But if you're on a standard machine like this one is, it was just a standard off-the-shelf Asus box, which was good at the time, and it seems to work quite well.
So can you find everything? Like, is control panel in the same place that it used to be?
And I'd have to say 90% yes, you can. If you're familiar with XP, you'll be able to find your way around through Vista relatively straightforward.
And the start button's round now.
It is. Ooh. It is, amongst other things that have gone round. But there are a couple of little things which I wasn't too sort of overly impressed. They've buried the command button, the command prompt, if you want to go and actually type something in like we would have to do, like you want to check an IP address or something.
Yep.
The command prompt's been buried, but you have to search and you'll find it. You just dig and you'll find it. So
start run and you can type commands in like you used to be able to? No.
The run option is no longer there.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about that on another show. But so far, so good. So yeah, the Vista experience wasn't too bad. But the reason why I thought I'd talk about my wife is because... are you guys familiar with carbon trading?
Carbon trading.
Yeah, no, it's a. We talked about the website
of
the week last week.
Is this similar to your website, CO2, is it?
It is, it is. My wife is on a kick to try and minimise as much carbon in the... minimise the carbon emissions that, you know, possible at the moment. So
water saving was all last... season, was it? Now it's all carbon saving.
We don't need to save water anymore because Melbourne weather flooded. Has done nothing but rain. We've got floods in Gippsland.
That's in Melbourne. What about Western Australia?
True. Yeah, that's true, Mark.
Hi to our Western Australian listeners too, by the way. That's good.
We've got still in drought over there, I believe.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, the carbon issue is that we've gone on a binge around the house at the moment to turn absolutely everything off after hours. And when you go to bed, you know, even nothing gets left untouched. Now, I need help here, boys. How can I tell my wife... that turning the range hood off over the stove, which doesn't have a clock or anything like that in it, is going to conserve electricity. How do I do this?
Her heart's in the right place, isn't it?
Okay.
But there are some...
She turns it off at the main switch, does she?
Pretty much. If she could get to the meter box and hit this big switch out there, I'm sure she would. But it's... I don't know. I'm at my wit's end, you know. How do we... And the other instance the other night, we're sitting, you know, she's charging her laptop. She says, oh, I better take it off charge now because it's going to use electricity beyond its charge and once it's full. And I'm... Anyway. Hi, Linda. I love her dearly and all that sort of stuff. Don't get me wrong.
There's electrons leaking across the insulation in the cord that joins it up or something.
I don't know. I just think this might be this misinformation that's floating around out there in the media about being... Now, I'm all for being green. Don't get me wrong. It's just that there are some things that you, when it's off, it's off. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When there's,
it's a physical off, isn't it? As opposed to a soft off.
And I
if
guess
that makes sense. Like you have on a TV or a video or something.
Exactly right. Exactly right, Mark. It's the TVs which, you know, if you need a remote control to turn them on, then that's the soft off of which you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of appliances these days are like that. You know,
but not the range hood.
No, not the range hood. Oh, we've also targeted the oven. Although the oven went backwards once we realised that you can't turn the griller on once it's had a first birthday. That's been powered up. You have to reprogram the thing.
Oh, wasn't it year 2000 compliant or something?
I don't know what happened.
Oh, no.
She said, why won't the lower oven work? And I'm like, oh, yeah.
So, yeah, try turning it on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a dead giveaway.
Yeah, so, anyway, I should stop talking about this now. Otherwise, I'm going to be in the doghouse officially from now on. But if anyone's got any suggestions, jump on the forum and let us know. Or give us an email at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Now, whilst on the subject of carbon, Hitwise, which is Australia's leading information supplier for people who visit websites, have released their June newsletter, which I found really quite interesting. In search terms at the moment, you'll never guess what the most popular search term is in Australia.
In Google or all search engines? Or
in Google.
In Google?
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, energy efficiency, carbon trading is up there.
Yeah, I was going to say something like water or something like that, because we've had a huge push in the media recently to save water and conserve water, because we are going through a very significant drought at the moment in Australia and in Victoria especially. And I would have thought that doesn't come as a surprise to me.
Well, that's good. Yeah, no, because we had Carbon Week and everyone's been talking about it. So it's been doing fairly well. And the top search carbon words have been carbon trading, carbon dioxide, carbon cycle, carbon neutral, and carbon credits. So it's coming through on Hitwise. And just out of curiosity, I bet you wouldn't know that the...
Closely followed by Paris Hilton and...
No, I didn't go to the American version to find out what it is, but I'm sure you can do that, actually. One night we should actually do a bit of a Google search. There's some very interesting thing. Google Trends is what you want. If you want to have a look, go and have a look at Google Labs. You've been to Google Labs?
Yeah, and you can see what people find interesting, what they're Googling, what they're searching for.
There is some pretty interesting stuff out there to go and have a bit of a look, see at. But so that's my dilemma at home, carbon. Now, in the news, Microsoft rolls out web storage. Have you heard about this,
yes,
Dr. Ron? What's going on here?
It was in the news. Their live service is going to be supplemented by two new services, he says, making it up off the top of his head because he doesn't have news notes in front of him. Web storage was one, and they're going to offer, I think, 500 megabytes online for storage of files, photographs, music, whatever you want to put there. And they're also going to have a photo sharing site as well, which is going to be similar to the existing services offered by people like Flickr, those sorts of sites.
That's pretty good for off the top of your head, because I've got the press release over here.
Was I close? Was it
500
meg? Yeah.
Right on the money. It says Microsoft has introduced two new online services to its Windows lineup, saying it plans to release more web offerings later on. I guess this is in direct competition to Google, because Google's out there doing all sorts of things.
Do you remember how much Google offer? Was it 1 gig?
I think it's about a gig, and that's going to grow, I suspect, in time because of what they're doing. Another interesting thing, which we'll touch on later, is Google are now, you know, Picasa, just because you mentioned the photo sharing.
Flickr.
Picasa is a little program which is free, and you can download it off Google, and it indexes all your photos on your hard drives, so you can browse by folder. It's a really good domestic thing for cataloguing your digital snaps, whether it be from your mobile phone, whether it be from a proper camera and all that sort of stuff.
How different would that be to Google Desktop or Microsoft Windows version of the Google Desktop. What's that called?
Well, this isn't the Google Desktop. This is Picasa. It's designed specifically for indexing your photographs and printing things.
I guess what I'm asking is, if you're running Google Desktop, why would you need this extra? Could you just type in something like that and it would find your photos on Google Desktop?
Yeah, but this is more streamlined storage. What it does is it takes folders and it will actually arrange them in an order. It allows you to email directly from the application, resize an email. Mm-hmm. It's just a bit of a user-friendly way of browsing images through your desktop, as opposed to something like Adobe Bridge, which is one of the products which comes through the Adobe suite. And that's a fairly expensive option, but it's a very powerful option. It lets you sort and sift and read and look and edit all your photos and, well, graphics in general. It knows which application to open. But this is really for a domestic version of a photo browser, I think. But
One
of the good things about it is that they're now linking it into Google Earth. So when you take your holidays and you click the image, it actually opens up Google Earth and says, this is where I took the photo from. So there's some new little gadgets and things
so
coming
how
along.
Long till, if it's that good, how long till Google buy them out?
It is Google. It's theirs.
Ah, okay.
They own it. That's Picasa was bought by Google.
It is the... All right. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so that's one of the big takeovers that have happened in recent times. Okay. So, but this is Microsoft having a go, getting back to where we were talking about before. They're offering 500 meg of web space.
A little bit later in the show, we'll be talking about EXIF data, EXIF data in images. So that sort of links
it
in.
Rather, in it does
ties in very, very well. So we'll have a look at the information that's also stored in JPEG and picture files a bit later on.
Now, last week you had Sarah Bond on.
We did.
Microsoft. And let me just tell you, I do have a version of Microsoft Office 2007 just for home and students. So first impressions are that it's... a lot more, I think she called it the ribbon at the top. There's a lot more information you can click on straight away. You don't have to go into the file menus for. Having said that, some of those menus are now missing. So as yet, I haven't found I haven't found the undo command yet. So I'm just control Z to undo things at the moment because I can't find the undo. And some things are in different spots. So I'm getting confused by that.
Are you just using Word or are you using?
Just Excel so far. Word, yeah, I've done something Word, but never done anything fancy other than, you know, what I could have probably done in Notepad anyway. But in Excel, great to have all those things at your fingertips, so to speak, you know.
So you're a rave for it, eh? You think it's good, Office 2007?
Yeah, other than the fact that the menus have changed and I still can't... Things have moved spots. So, you know, where you used to think this was under edit, do this, you know, it was there, it's no longer there, and you don't have that edit menu. And one guy who's really good at work with using Excel... did everything via the keypad, so he knew all the shortcuts, so everything was done via his fingers, never touched the mouse, and he's going, oh no, everything's the menu, you know, I can't go alt F to go alt to open the file menu anymore. He's going, what do I do?
It does, it's a new way of thinking, isn't it?
So he'll have to get used to that. I mean, he hasn't got it yet, but he'll have to get used to it. But that's his first impression. He's going, oh no, that's going to slow me down because I don't have those menus and all the shortcuts won't work anymore.
I have a colleague at work who I've moved to the dark side. He was a Mac user. He now has a PC. And it was funny actually, he was getting used to it today. He's only had it a couple of days. In fact, it's another similar laptop to the one that I got my wife. And so far, so good. He's been suitably impressed. He's actually... his possibilities have doubled because he now has a left and a right mouse button to click.
Yes.
And he certainly picked up with the idea that, you know, the left mouse click is a, you know, point and select, and the right mouse click is like the doing command. So if you want to...
The options, you know, behind it. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going, oh, this is pretty good. So
you don't often hear about people moving from Mac to PC, do you? It's usually the other way around.
People exactly.
And what sort of... what possessed him to move to the PC? Was there an application on it that he... Oh, really?
Dollars. Mm-hmm. For what he got on a PC and comparing to the similar thing in a Mac, it was half the price. So it was a fairly simple, straightforward sort of mathematical...
matter of economics.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, too, like all the tete-a-tete aside about Macs and PCs, you got to look at what you do. If you're a muso or a graphic designer and the trendy Mac is for you, then it's for you. Whereas if you're just doing word processing and email and back office type sort of stuff, then... let's face it, the PC does everything that you need it to do for a fraction of the price. And even with the open office type sort of applications and the freeware that's now available through the open source platforms, you can certainly put together what in previous years would cost you a lot of money very, very cheaply these days. So,
can I just mention one other thing that I noticed? When I loaded Office 2007, it overwrote a few dictionaries, one of them being the English one. So when I went to use Outlook Express, it wasn't compatible anymore with that dictionary that had been overwritten by Office 2007.
So did you get errors within Outlook Express, did you?
It wouldn't do a spell check unless I wanted to do it in French.
Oh, parlez-vous français?
Pardon?
Yes, exactly.
Polly wants a what?
Yes, exactly. I'm just reading some emails here. Speaking of crackers, yes. The Cocky says hello, by the way. Oh, Cocky Microsoft being a reference to our last show. We don't want to leave these things unexplained. The Cocky did find his avatar, remember?
Yes, GD's got his images sorted out. That's good news. Sorry, Mark.
Sorry, Mark.
I was just going to say that Microsoft's option to fix that is to go and get a third-party dictionary that suits Outlook Express.
Okay.
Now, just because we're running way behind the schedule at the moment, let's just briefly touch on a few other things in our rundown. Telstra rivals are going to get a rent reduction. How about this? Telstra has been ordered by the ACCC to reduce the wholesale rate that it provides users access, or their competitors access, to the copper, the unbundled local loop, the copper that comes into your house.
How's your mate going? Did he have something to say about that, did he?
I must admit, the bull terrier hasn't been out of late. Well, I did see him briefly the other day, but it wasn't his normal rant.
No, he was noticeable by his absence this week, Mr. Burgess.
Yeah, he hasn't dropped out in John Fain's program, one of the ABC guys here locally, where he was up there talking about it. He just disappeared off the radio at one stage. I thought, oh, next G. He's wigging well. Mark doesn't work for the organisation anymore. He saw the light, didn't you?
We're not going there.
No, exactly. No. Exactly. So, but that's going to be, I don't know what it's going to mean to the consumer, but at the end of the day, the ACCC backdated a price rise of in 2004 of $13.30 and allowed incremental rises. So there's a bit of, you know, give and take on both sides there. But in essence, I think it's about a $5 reduction in band one, because they've got four bands. If you live really close, you don't pay much. If you live in the countryside, you pay a lot, and then it's subsidised across all the access points and things like that.
Well, with all that extra revenue they'll be pulling in from their new advertising campaign.
Oh, don't start me on that. Hang on, let me get the press release. Have you seen them on air yet?
I haven't seen them.
Yeah, saw one on Sunday night.
Dustin Hoffman.
Who was on it, Mark?
The Dustin Hoffman one, yeah, I saw that one.
Right, Dustin, there's more. There's more. Don't wait. There's Bob Geldof.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's
there's
correct.
Bob Geldof.
And this there's one other.
I'm looking. No, there's two
big
others.
Names. Two other big names.
You've got me out of order on my rundown now. I'm sorry. I'll just find it here.
He's a big spanner. I'll just throw it in your works here.
Yeah. Who was the other one? There was one from McLeod's Daughters whose name I can't remember.
She's with Dustin Hoffman, though.
Oh, is she? Mm. Okay. And there was one more, too.
John McEnroe.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think we were saying before the show, I know certainly that I always have valued John McEnroe's opinion of telephone networks prior to picking a handset or making a decision about what carrier I run with. Now, I mean, what are they thinking? This is bizarre.
Can I just say, these are what you call product endorsements. This is what I do for Crust. You know, like, we do a lot of this sort of thing. These guys do not come cheap.
No, you wouldn't think so. Those big names.
And those costs do tend to be passed on to the consumer. So if you're with Telstra, just consider yourself that you're supporting these guys in their quest for wealth, I guess.
Having John McEnroe make television advertisements.
They've got a catch cry, haven't they? Something like, it wouldn't happen in Australia, or I think the words they use that John McEnroe uses as his phone drops out in the lift or something.
Let's change the subject. Opel. Those guys who are rolling out WiMAX in the bush, $250 for an installation is, and someone's going to have to come out and professionally install it.
Yeah, that's cheap. I reckon.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good price.
Good.
And what's all the brouhaha about all the spectrum?
I know people disagree with this, but I reckon that's a good price. Yeah, I do. It actually has to be done.
Especially when we both work in the industry, Mark. Yeah, you know, $250 for an installation as a one-off to
we look at an hourly rate for those guys to come out and do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. That's a good
imagine
price.
The travel time to get to some of these places.
Well, especially if you're out in the back of Bourke.
Yeah.
Or Kilsyth. Or those sort of places.
Bandwidth impaired in the bush.
Exactly. Yes. Or Camberwell, for that matter.
It costs more than $250 just to get there.
Yeah,
it is. A lot of them.
So that was news. But what about all the bandwidth? Because there's all this thing, like behind-the-scenes arguments about which company owns which bandwidth, and now they're all doing backroom deals.
To try and,
well, I'll swap you a bit of 3 gig for a bit of 5 gig. And it's like, what? So hopefully it all holds together with Band-Aids and sticky tape and rubber bands and all that sort of stuff. So
I think it will. Each of the different organisations will have a strategy as to what types of infrastructure they need to deploy in what bands and for what areas, what geographic areas, I guess. So they're going to need to do dodgy deals to make sure they've got the right parts of the spectrum for the right areas and they've got themselves covered.
And how many more towers are going to have to go up to see all this?
That's a point too, yeah.
iPhone.
iFlop.
Have you registered that domain name? Because a lot of people are actually registering all these iPhone domain names now.
Yes, they are. Yes. Oh, yeah. I watched a brilliant video during the week, and we'll talk about that when we get to the website to the other end of the program. But yeah, lots of iPhone news, of course, this week with the launch on Friday. I think it was, again, I've got my notes in front of me, 6 p.m. in each time zone. No, that's all right. I'll just make it up as I go along. I usually do. 6 p.m. in each time zone in the US, and they've sold a lot, like 500,000 or something in the first day.
And it's all because of the user interface? That's allegedly. That's a bit fancy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can't you do this on iMates and Jazz Jams and all these other HP things?
Look, it's a 2G already? Phone with a calendar in it and the camera in it doesn't take video and yeah,
can
whatever.
I just say that I was summoned to the ABC studios here in South Bank in Melbourne during the course of the week to actually talk about the iPhone.
Did they want your professional opinion, did they?
They did, and they said, why are we so backwardly compatible in this country? Why can't we have iPhone? And I said, well, it's in fact the opposite. We're more advanced than what the Americans have got.
It is
and
the
as a result,
exact opposite. That's
and as
right.
a result, we can't, you know, because Apple have released this, you know, all singing, all dancing device, which works on, you know, the network, which is being turned off in January, if it hasn't gone already in some places.
If I went over to the US with my 3G handset, or you went over with your HSDPA data card, well, yeah, you're not going to get the full use out of that, are you?
So we do have some things to be grateful for over here. We are well and truly invested. Even when Seoul got up and announced the rollout of Next G with all the sprinklers and all that, remember that?
That was the day that changed their lives.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, that's in our opener. If you go back to that day, he was right. He actually is rolling out technology for which there are not many handsets available for at the moment in an effort to future-proof the country. And I think that's evident here because iPhone is just not compliant in Australia just yet. Having said that, iPhone, according to some of its critics, is just 2.1.0, you know, first generation. As a result, there's a lot of bugs that need to be improved.
Yep.
In an Australian IT reported this week that Apple's upcoming iPhone is shaping up as the year's must-have gadget in the US, but several perceived shortcomings are pushing some potential buyers to wait for an updated version. Worries over the high cost, slow network speed and battery life are deterring some customers from paying up to $589 Australian dollars, or about $500 US, for the device, despite the buzz across the gadget crazed landscape of tech retail. So that just goes to show that I know the gadget friendly, the people that want to embrace this technology, and I'd put Australians in that category too. There'd be a lot of Australians out there wanting to get hold of this device, are just not going to be able to use it here, not to mention it's a bit 1.0. So
I think there's plenty of other devices already out there that do similar things, but maybe not as nicely packaged, but have the latest technology in them. So you could probably find something that suits your needs just by looking around at all the existing ones that are out there, you know?
It's going to be interesting to see how people respond to the iPhone in terms of not having a keyboard or not having a keypad. Everything has to be done from this touch interface. And people are used to being able to do something, sit there, they can be watching television, they can be talking to someone else, and they can have a phone in their hand, they can be texting, they can be sending messages, they can be quickly dialing up email and looking at things like that in their contacts, and they can be pushing buttons. It's having a phone in your hand with a keypad, it's a very tactile thing. With the iPhone, you're not going to be able to do that in the same way, I don't think. You're going to have to be concentrating on the display and moving your fingers around and managing the interface. So it'll be interesting to see what the feedback's like over the next few weeks from the people who have got some of the first models.
Jeff Gates, he's a regular listener. He's always at the forefront of these devices. Maybe he's bought one. Maybe he's come across one in a Walmart store or something like that, and you can send us a bit of a review or something like that.
I'll get on the case, Jeff. I also noticed with interest that iTunes 7.3 upgrade reminder popped up when
it tried to. I was checking Soundcast tonight, the streaming, and there it was. No, I don't want this.
With iTunes 7.3, you can now activate iPhone service and sync it with your music, TV shows, movies, and more. The information notice told me. I thought, oh, that's good. So I need iPhone service on my computer at home here in Melbourne. Yes.
Yes.
All right then.
So you going to get one?
Well, you just
bought a Sony Ericsson with MP3s that play slowly or fastly.
Don't mention the war. We'll talk about it later on. You can't buy them in retail outlets here at the moment, but you can get them on Craigslist and eBay, those sorts of online auction sites, about 2,000 US.
Yeah, right. Okay.
If you've got the splash, if you're that keen.
Indeed. Adam Turner, he had a chat to BT's boss, British Telecom's boss over here, because he was comparing notes about the rollout and privatisations of, you know, all and sundry that we're going through here in Australia at the moment. Here's what happened.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
This week marks 10 years since telecommunications deregulation in Australia. the date when competitors gained full access to Telstra's copper network. 10 years on, we certainly haven't achieved the level playing field people would have been aiming for back then. Telstra still uses its ownership of the copper as a bargaining chip to get its own way. To see how the other half live, I recently had a chat with Ben Verwaayen, the Chief Executive Officer of British Telecom. When Verwaayen took over the top job at the UK's biggest telco 5 years ago, he stepped into the middle of a fight that will sound all too familiar to Australians. In Verwaayen's own words, BT was at war with the regulator. Accused of abusing its market power, BT was under pressure to drop its prices and improve access to its network for competitors. As he took the reins, debate raged as how to best curb BT's monopolistic tendencies, with a strong push for the telco to sell off its wholesale arm to stop it hindering competitors' access to the network. This sounds a lot like Australia today, but what happened next is something Australians can only dream of at this point. Verwaayen fought pressure to break up BT, instead working with the regulator on functional rather than structural separation. BT began by slashing wholesale prices to create a more level playing field for competitors, and in 2005, it separated its network and wholesale operations to form Openreach. Openreach is a division of BT designed to maintain the network, and it gives BT retail and its competitors equal access to that network. While Australia argues about who is going to build a national high-speed fibre network, BT is already building such a network in the UK, promising to offer 24 megabits per second data speeds to 70% of customers within 2 years. Verwaayen scoffed at the idea that the Openreach model of equal network access for competitors might not be applied to this new network. He said, "Functional separation doesn't just apply to the copper in the street, it applies to the access network. Access network means the connection to the premises regardless of the technology, and the telcos will be able to negotiate access to this new network the same way they do our existing network." Verwaayen shook his head in dismay as I told him of Telstra's threats not to build such a high-speed network in Australia if it's forced to share it under such terms. "Well, I come from a completely different planet," he said. I told him anytime he feels like moving to our planet, we've got a telco he could run. You can find the full story of this online at theage.com.au/technology/next.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins are here, and I'm Andrew McComb for Tech Talk Radio for this fairly nippy winter's day here down south where we are at the moment. Dr. Ron, you've had a bit of a bad experience with Thunderbird, which is the email client for, what are you, Ubuntu? Is that right?
Right. It can run on anything. It can run on Ubuntu, on Linux, or it can run on Windows, but I did have a bad experience, but I had a good experience. So we'll start out with the bad, and then we'll end on the good.
I like that, yes.
Yeah, good. Thunderbird, it's a free email application. Okay, so it's even available on Mac OS X.
No, so you get your money back for it.
Yeah, you don't have to fork out any money.
That's good.
Which is good.
What do you mean when you don't like it?
That's correct. If you want to have a try, and I encourage you to, go to mozilla.com. You can download it from there. It's an open source mail application. And I absolutely love the spam filtering. And the
works, does it?
The junk mail integration it's got. Yeah, it's really good. It's very good. That's what sold me on it. The bad experience I had, though, was I had some emails that went missing. And I hate it when that happens. I opened the emails and the email form opened up, but the content, the message content was completely blank.
Yeah, where did the mail come from? Was it off a...
Just normal email. I'm using it in POP3 mode, so it's people who are just sending me standard messages, and I've read them, and then I've gone to double-click on them in the inbox to
so
open
So I suggest
them.
Your spam filter's working very well.
Well,
too well, maybe.
A little bit too well. They hadn't been marked.
So
as,
you've already read them before.
Yeah, and then I went to read them again, just to say, I wonder, now Mark sent me this email a couple of days ago, let's have a look at what he sent, and when I opened it, the message form was completely blank. It's very strange.
Yep.
So I thought, I'll close Thunderbird, I'll start it again. But the problem was still there. It was happening to more messages. I thought, oh, this is bad.
And there's a way you can repair what they call repairing your inbox or repairing the database that the messages are actually stored in. And I went through that process and reopened or restarted Thunderbird, and it certainly had repaired the problem because all the messages were completely gone that I was, having trouble with. So my inbox that had 30 messages in was down to 23 messages. So I wasn't very happy about that.
Are you just saying this so that you can make excuses to those people you should have replied to and you haven't?
We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show as well. We'll talk about that
so
one too.
So repair by delete, was it?
Well, what I did was for the technical people there, I re-indexed the database, deleted the old index file and re-indexed it, and this is what happened. So the problem hasn't happened again, but I've since upgraded. I've gone from version 1.5 to version 2 of Thunderbird, mm-hmm. and I absolutely love version 2 of Thunderbird. Some really nice new features.
Why do they call it Thunderbird? Any reason? I always think of the puppets.
Thunderbirds Are Go. It's just the product name, yeah. and it goes hand in hand with the Firefox web browser, okay. which we're all fans of too. So I'd encourage, if you're using something like Outlook Express, you were mentioning earlier, Mark.
Yep.
If you're using something like that, give Thunderbird a try.
So I use Outlook, and Outlook's not a good way to go that way.
It's a different product.
Because I use
again.
The calendar and all that sort of stuff, and it needs to talk to that thing called Exchange Server.
Well, you're running it in a different mode, Andrew. You're running it in a corporate mode where you're connecting to a server on your network.
Yes.
This is for most people who would log onto the internet and click send receive.
Okay. So give it a whirl if you've had enough of Outlook Express.
Yeah, try Thunderbird. I'd encourage you to. Even though I've had a few problems there, I'm just pointing out that not everything is completely... You know, you have problems with everything that you use, I guess, from time to time.
Now, let's talk about PVRs, personal video recorders.
Yes.
These are very much the new in thing. You buy them as part of a set-top box. They're high definition and some are standard definition.
Some are analog.
Yeah, well, yes. The reason why I knew you were out on the hustings this last week looking to buy, I think, your father-in-law a PVR.
It was his 60th birthday, and we were getting him a nice present for his 60th birthday.
And was that his request for a PVR,
no.
or did you just take that was your initiative?
It was a surprise.
Okay.
Yeah, it was that. Everyone in the family chipped in, and we had a definite budget, and we went shopping.
Was he surprised at how he couldn't use it with all these different features and buttons and menus?
He's still getting used to it, I think, Mark.
Has he cottoned onto the concept of what a PVR does?
I think so.
Because it's a different mindset for a lot of people, because people think, what the hell's a PVR? Well, it's apart from the fact it's a personal video recorder, they equate it back to the VHS days where you put a tape in, you recorded it. But it does more than that, doesn't it?
There's different...
What did you find when you were shopping?
Well, there are different products and for different budgets and for different functions, Andrew. So at the lower end, you can have devices which just write straight to a DVD, and they don't have a hard disk in them.
I've got one of those.
You do? You've got one at home. What model is that? What brand?
Yeah.
Yep, it's one of those ones.
I can't remember. Seriously, knowingly.
There's the next lot would have hard disks in them, so you can actually hit record, and it writes to the hard disk, just like you would record something to a hard disk in a computer. If you then want to keep it, other than on your hard disk, you can burn it to DVD as well.
So the machine has to have a DVD recorder in it as well.
It does. It's integrated with a DVD recorder. That's right.
As Adam says, his next toaster is going to have an Ethernet cable in the back. Do these things have Ethernet cables
on
the back?
No, they don't. And I was bemoaning this and making very loud, obvious, pointed comments at the sales staff at JB and Harvey Norman about, where's the Ethernet connector? How do I program it? How do I HTTP into this to program it remotely? And they looked at me like I had two heads. I said, well, it's an obvious thing to want to do. Why can't I do it? So... Listen up, LG, Pioneer, everybody
else.
All the majors, yeah, get with it. We want web servers and Ethernet ports.
Well, maybe they're going PVRs. Bluetooth. Bluetooth would be good, so you can just wirelessly connect into it.
maybe not.
Wireless would be good. There is a high-end one with wireless, I think. Yes,
Beyond Wiz might have one.
Yeah,
of those.
It might be the Beyond Wiz model that Adam is raves about, and I saw that for sale.
Now, did you buy it? No, obviously.
No, it's a bit out of my price range, but it looks like a very nice little unit, though.
We should get Adam in fairly shortly, and we can talk because this is his speciality. He loves the digital living room and the onslaught of all these new technological gadgets. But
in search of Nerdvana,
that's the one.
Have you used the timeshift function yet?
That was going to be my next question.
I haven't used it yet at all, so I'm going to put it through the hoops over the next few weeks and keep your eye on the forum and the blog and everything else,
now,
I think.
That is great.
Tell me about your buying criteria for your parents-in-law, because most parents are not tech-savvy. The sight of another remote control can quite often send them into convulsions on the floor going, what do I need this for?
They're not too bad because they've got they do record a lot of programs to tape at the moment to their VCR. One of the main
The main things I was looking at in buying a PVR was having a digital tuner inbuilt, because they were worried...
As opposed to analog, for digital television.
Exactly right. Because they were worried that they had bought a new television recently, or in the last few years, that is to say, and it had an analog tuner in it, but they were concerned that sometime in the next couple of years, that their TV wouldn't be able to receive free-to-air television anymore.
In an analog format, that's true. 2012.
Mm. That's right. So they were looking at buying a set-top box, and I said, well, if you're going to get a PVR, get it with the digital tuner built in. And they live over the other side of town, and especially when they watch Channel 2, first of all, you can hear the aeroplane.
That's the ABC for those wanting to know.
That's it, Channel 2, the ABC, I'm sorry, yes. I'm showing my
very
age
low,
there, aren't I?
Very low frequency
signal. It is,
signal.
A VHF Channel 2. And you can hear the aeroplane first. I live near Melbourne Airport, and you can hear the aeroplane, and then you see all of the wonky picture.
Oh, the multipath, where the signal bounces from the TV transmitter off the wings of the aircraft.
That's
and then
it.
Back down, and it meets just at the TV antenna at the same time as the real one does,
exactly.
And cancels it itself out.
It is so predictable. And yeah. I said, look, you won't know yourselves with digital television. The picture will just drop out altogether. No, it'll be really good. No, it'll be spot on. It'll be nice and crystal clear. You'll have no multipath or any problems at all. So that was one of the biggest criteria I was looking at, Andrew.
So, and you got it back there? Installation? How did it go?
We haven't got it set up and running 100% yet, no, but...
What's the problem? What could possibly be the issue?
I haven't been able to set it up.
Oh, okay, so it's just purely you just
haven't... I told them to set it up, have a go, you know, what could possibly go wrong, but no, they haven't done it yet. But I'll put it through the hoops. I'll go over there, set it up, give it a trial run, and give you some feedback.
All right. The new gadget which is coming along is the TiVo, which... I think a lot of people have heard of. You all heard of TiVo. It used to be big still is big in the United States. And it's probably the equivalent of what you've just been talking about, the personal video recorder, only it works electronically. It can actually look at the electronic program guide. And when you say, I want to record this particular program, it'll let you do it. It'll record a whole series and do all that sort of stuff. And this is all coming to Australia thanks to the Channel 7 network and Engine.
Engine, the phone people.
Which are the internet phone people. They do the cheap phone calls. The 7 network has unveiled a 3-pronged strategy to win back viewers lost to the internet after two of its US hits emerged as the most popular illegally downloaded programs.
Yep.
As I spoke about in the opening of the show tonight.
Yep.
Now, this is quite tragic when you think about the fact that commercial television in this country has lost 7% of its viewers in the last 12 months. What's to stop that? Absolutely nothing. With the advent of high-speed broadband, people, whether you be young, old, whatever, if you have any form of tech savviness or young children in the family, you can find where to download absolutely anything from an electronic point of view, plug it into your, you know, burn it to a DVD or a CD even these days, because the format which you can download a lot of programs is the DivX format. And the DivX format, guess what? It plays. You just pop it into the DVD player on your desktop. It just plays. You don't have to convert it. You don't have to do anything. So
the selling feature for a lot of these new PVRs as well is that they support the DivX format. You don't actually need to have a commercially produced DVD.
Mm-hmm.
You can have something which you've burnt from something you've downloaded. You can just drop the disc in and it will play.
So let's, and I'm sure they're referring to the program Lost, which was fairly big in the United States and fairly big here. I have a colleague at the office who absolutely loves it and has seen all the programs even before they went to air here in Australia.
I have colleagues at my office that always want it downloaded. They so and miss an episode, Dr. Ron. Are you able to find me series something episode this?
See, the other thing too is once you find a site which contains all these programs, that's good coming from you, you can actually download a lot more. You're blushing.
It's hot in here all of a sudden. Oh, yeah. ISOHunt.com is the website you want. But what Andrew's saying is spot on. It is so easy to do, and the networks really need to sit up and take notice, because if they do
just
nothing
change the
to...
subject beautifully.
No, well, this is what I'm paid the big bucks
exactly.
for.
Exactly.
If this trend continues over the next 5 to 10 years, what's going to happen to commercial networks? They're going to lose half their audience. It's really is a serious problem that the networks have to address.
I saw a television program on the ABC the other night, just after Doctor Who, and it was all to do with the games and the 18 to 30-year-old boys that play these games. Despite for the fact that it was a very shocking and revealing program in respect to the habits of these young kids and things like first-person shooting games and things like that. One of the revelations that came out of it was that globally now, young kids of that age group watch no more than 27 minutes of television a day. to an advertiser, which would advertise on a commercial television network, that represents probably two commercial breaks tops.
I don't think I'd watch more than an hour a day, to be honest, over a week. I average about an hour a day.
Well, so far, I haven't even turned the television on a commercial station today. Mm. So, yeah, but I'm not that target market. So you can sort of sense the frustration that's coming with television in this country. Now, you look at the TiVo. The TiVo in itself has the ability to automatically skip commercial breaks.
It does, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Channel 7 can lock it. They can nominate what you can skip and what you can't
skip. That's correct.
I think, yeah.
Yes, that's correct. Now, apply that thinking a little bit further to other television stations which don't have that control, and what do you think they can do? Yes, doesn't ponder it really, does it? Do you think of what they... Yes. So this new device is going to come out. Now, we really should get Adam in to have a chat about this because he'll know all the good stuff about it. But it's going to be launched next year. 2008 is when it's going to appear in the Australian market.
What will it let us do, Andrew? If I'm sitting at home now and I'm thinking, I like watching programs on Channel 7, should I get a TiVo? Shouldn't I? What will it let me do?
In essence, it's going to let you do what the PVR does, except it's... It uses the electronic program guide to actually start the recording. So instead of saying, I want to record this channel at this time for this duration, which is probably what you're used to doing.
Well, for the last 20 or 30 years, we've programmed video recorders and said, start recording at 8:30 p.m. Now, if the network is running 7 minutes late, you're going to miss the first 7 minutes of your show, aren't you?
Yes.
So the TiVo...
Should cater for
should
that.
Should cater for this. It electronically knows when the program is starting.
But theoretically, too, and I'll stand corrected on this because I haven't played with one yet, it's what I've been reading, is instead of saying you want to record a program at the time, date, and channel, you say, I want to record this program. And it knows what the time, date, and channel is. And it then says, do you want to record the rest of these series? Like, pick a program, any soapy, any science fiction, anything like that. Say, this is the ones I want. And it automatically records it for you without you having to think beyond
the time,
beyond
and the
that one program setting. Yep. It'll
so
just do that.
How different is this to the G code that we used to have with VHS, where you buy a VHS video recorder and you could put a G code in that came out of the magazine, and it would actually have in that code all the details of which channel, which time it came on, and which duration, that sort of thing?
Well, it was just a fast way to get the program information into your VCR.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have contained in that barcode, it would have the start time and the stop time and the channel of the for the that particular program.
Yep.
But it's not going to get around the problem if the network's running 5 minutes late, or they change the program at the last minute and they say, oh, look, instead of airing Lost tonight, we're going to show you another rerun of MASH or something. I don't know, whatever they decide to do. And you'll end up having something recorded which you never wanted to record. With the TiVo and using the electronic program guide, it will actually say, Mark wants this program. It's not running now. I'm not going to just automatically start recording at 8:30 p.m.
Okay.
I'm going to wait until 9:30 when it's been delayed until and start recording then.
Okay. One of the other things...
And then it records it to hard disk?
Yes.
Which is built into it. And then when you play it back, you can play it back without ads under those
you can time shift and do all that sort of stuff.
Yep, that you talked about before.
One of the things that we haven't spoken about at the moment is that it is a subscription service to actually use the box. Channel 7 are actually going to launch... This is according to Australian IT. Channel 7 are going to launch the box for a lower than expected cost of around about $200 to buy the box. And then you will need to have a monthly subscription, of which they don't tell you how much that's going to be.
Mm.
So, in effect, that's probably where they're going to get their commercial revenue back from in the subscription model.
So, how much can you record on it? How many episodes? Not necessarily how big the hard disk is, because you don't know, what mode it records in, but how many hours of footage could you record, do you think?
Honestly, don't know at this point in time. They haven't hit the country yet, so a lot of them came in from the US. People brought them in over here and cracked them or did whatever they did so they work in the Australian market.
Mm-hmm.
But now that the new version's going to come out, who knows? One of the major reasons for doing this, I think, is really to combat the loss of revenue, I guess. It means that they can at least... They're thinking outside the square, which I think is what television needs to do in this country a little bit, because everyone in TV, and I work in the industry, has cut so much to the bone that there's no more bone left to cut. You know, you can only make a television program on a shoestring now, and the next choice is stop making it. There's nothing else you can take out of local content. And as a result, I think that's why people don't want to watch television these days. There's a few really good shows still around, which do have the budgets, but normally they're paid for by sponsors. But when it comes to regular, ordinary, everyday TV, like we're used to, we're not sort of seeing too much of it these days.
Okay.
So, Dr. Ron, do you reckon a TiVo is going to be for you? Because I reckon it is for me. It's going to be like what the VHS was back in 1975 when they first hit the market here in Australia. Everybody had to have one. I'll be there.
I'm going to say no, it's not for me. I'm going to stick with the media center concept, that is having a...
Well, there's a brazen decision.
Well, it's that is having a PC as a fundamental component to in the lounge room, connected to the television and the stereo and everything else. I understand that the media center component is not for everybody. It's a next, in my mind, it's a next level of advancement, I guess, or a next level of commitment in terms of technology.
Gives but you lots of options.
Gives you lots of options, Mark.
No subscription as well.
Exactly. But there is obviously a trade-off in terms of you need a degree of technical nous to operate it.
Mm-hmm.
And a TiVo would be something which is very simple. You can just pick up a remote, press the on button, and the startup time straight away starts recording straight away. You don't have to wait 3 minutes for the machine to boot to get into the application that you want and so on.
Almost surprised there's not software written for Media Center that would do the same thing. You know, I'm sure it would be coming. It's a bit like, I've got a personal organizer, which you can get some software for and turn it around and it becomes your remote control for your TV and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone will just write some software that will work on Windows Media and effectively do the same thing, read the program guide off air and allow you to program.
Well, there are third-party Media Center apps that do that, and mm-hmm. they are a lot better and a lot more schmick than the Microsoft Media Center product. And at the moment, I'm looking at different products which to replace Microsoft Media Center with, but to have that running on a PC as an integrated component in the lounge room.
It's interesting. That was what Adam had problems with last week with his Media Center and getting his card to work under Vista. So maybe there'll be a few more little bugs and glitches that we're going to see along the way.
And I can understand people that want to commit the time to muck around with that sort of stuff. If you can get a TiVo and open the box, plug it in, and it just works, then good on you. If that fits your requirements, then that's great.
It's another sort of version of pay TV in a lot of respects, because if you think of Foxtel, they have the IQ, which is probably the nearest competitor to the TiVo. But I think the TiVo in itself, once again, we have to see how it plugs in and how it connects with our other televisions and Wi-Fi and things like that, because there's still those options and everyone's different. You need to have a look. But I think the revolution that the TiVo will be is certainly going to get legs, especially at a cheap price. If they can roll it out for something which is not going to break the bank. Because when they originally were touted to come out, they were in the $800 mark. And they've, I think in another press release, they sort of said $500. And in this press release, they're saying, you know, that's going to be subsidized at $200. And if you look at the telephone company models, that means a higher subscription probably. Or a longer subscription, a contract. Let's hope Telstra doesn't get behind it, because we'll be paying through the nose.
I know that Foxtel is feeling the pressure at the moment as well. I'm not a Foxtel subscriber, but have spoken to several people in the last few months who have all said, oh, I've got the IQ boxes, which you have to pay a premium for on your plan, but there's been introductory offers and free periods and grace periods, and they've all called up Foxtel and said, can we have this free for another month? I think that we should. And Foxtel said, yeah, okay. So they really want people to take up the IQ product for the, you know, so that they're obviously feeling a lot of pressure from the networks, because they know that people like Seven and Engine are going to be doing this sort of stuff.
And they still, the consumers are still very tech savvy. They're still going to go and download these movies and things like that. So it really needs to come back to the television networks and say, if a program comes out in its local market, you can't wait any longer than that, maybe a week or two, otherwise people are going to get in there and start downloading it and watch it locally and copy it and give it to their friends.
They are, that's right.
Let's face it, you can go buy a memory stick these days, which you can put a whole television series on if you really wanted to.
Well, I've got the 1 gigabyte memory stick on my keyring here. It cost $20 from Officeworks, and it's like a disposable memory stick. Here, I'd chuck you this, Mark. This has got the complete season 3 of something on it, and there you go, and you give me yours and I'll give you mine. It's great. It's all just too easy.
So that's the TiVo, ladies and gentlemen. You'll hear a lot more about that in coming days, coming weeks, no doubt, as its launch gets closer in Australia. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is here, and Mark Diggins is on the panel this evening. When we return, we're going to have a bit of a chat about Crazy John. Remember him? He used to be Telstra's number one mobile phone dealer. Well, let's just say he saw the light. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn,
On a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor car visiting the relatives, Charlie, washing the car. Pressing.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Crazy John is a bit of a retailer, everyone knows him. I've made television commercials for him, believe it or not. Is That's why he's so rich and famous.
Is that big guy? Oh.
And I'm not.
Is that big guy that used to climb down the chimney with his mobile phones and stuff?
John Ilhan is the guy who runs it. So he was Telstra's number one mobile phone dealer for many, many years. And in recent times, he's had a bit of a stoush with the incumbent.
Oh.
Been in and out of court many, many times. We're not here to talk about legalities of it or anything like that, but suffice to say that Crazy John, or John Ilhan, is now looking to become a carrier, I guess, in his own right. He's going to adapt the Virgin model. You know Virgin, when they had their mobiles come out and all that, they used to buy...
They resell one of the other telcos.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, he's about to do the same with Vodafone.
So he's going to resell Vodafone.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a bit of a jump. Like, Vodafone, obviously, very happy with that. If you look at the way Crazy John has done some amazing things for Telstra in the course of time, rolling out the phones in a fairly saturated market. But I just think, yeah, it's a big, bold, brave move in a lot of respects, because you're leaving from where you used to be, going into new territory and all that sort of stuff. So
I wonder what will distinguish him from competitors.
Well, the network, I guess. Obviously, Telstra had the biggest and best network when it came to coverage, and it used to work. It still does work, actually. The Vodafone, I don't know, Vodafone, they're with Optus, aren't they, Mark? Do you know that? Or they got their own, they roll out their own stuff, do they?
Their own.
Got their own independent network with their own towers and their own equipment.
How well and truly entrenched is their stuff? Are they like...
The GSM network's obviously old hat now, and it's well entrenched and that sort of thing. They sort of share a network with, at 2100, their 3G technology.
That's right, yeah.
But I think in the city they have their own base stations where they might share the same hut and tower. They have their own base stations.
Yeah.
And in the country they might share the same base station rack, but they'll have their own transceivers or... you know, transmitters inside that, different one for Optus and different one for Vodafone. So even there, they're actually still sharing a lot of the equipment, but not all of it. They've got a fair bit of coverage. And, you know, there's a few others like that, isn't there? One going around an ad I've seen on TV at the moment called Soul. I think they're a reseller.
Yeah, they're another. There's all these rebranding, reselling people that are coming
and
out.
And Virgin they go for the youth market, so they do a lot of free texting, Virgin to Virgin. That's their selling point. That's their differentiation.
My wife's discovered texting of recent times too.
Yeah.
And MMSing. My goodness.
How many times a day?
I got a movie the other day. No, it's all right. I think I mentioned that.
Don't tell me your problem.
Home movies.
It came from your telephone, but it wasn't sent by you. It was sent by one of your children, I think.
That's because I have young children.
That's right. I made a lovely little home movie.
Yes.
And send it on. I wonder who's in memory number two. We'll send it there.
Yes, memory six, I think, for
memory six, am I? Okay.
Yes, exactly. But the MMS side of stuff is really starting to kick off in our household. And I think a lot of people are... cottoning on to the fact that you can do this, more so than video. Video's never really taken off, has it? Have you guys, like, I know Dr. Ron and I, when the carrier that we're with comes up and does a free video day, we give it plenty, but they try and get you to use the video network, and I must admit, I've never really played with it beyond the free days. You go, oh, yeah.
The only reason I don't use it is because of the cost. It's not included in my cap, and unless it's a free day, as Andrew's saying, it's cost me a lot of money, so I just don't do it.
Mark, have you played with the video stuff? I know you were involved in getting television programs to handsets at one stage, but have you used it for calling people with?
Yeah, you had that ability, and the wife's got a cap plan, so even though it does cost, it's relatively... Well, it's part of the cap, so she could use it for that. And no need, other than actually enabling it once and trying it to make sure it worked, haven't used it.
And we did the fridge experiment, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, refresh our memories with the fridge experiment.
Well, that
still gets Google hits all around the place, I must admit.
It's bizarre.
Dr. Ron's fridge experiment with a mobile phone.
What are people searching for up in their Google results? We
movies, obviously.
Maybe they are. We set up a video call. I think myself and Mark did, or myself and Graham Callaghan, and we put one phone in the fridge and closed the door of the fridge, and we proved three things. One, that the light in the fridge does go off when you close the door. Two, that three had exceptional phone coverage. It worked inside a closed fridge. And three, Something else.
You needed new seals for the door of your fridge.
I think that's what it was leaking radiation. Can I just ask you, mate, we're talking about mobile virtual network operators, that sort of thing that Crazy John is going to do. Do they essentially resell the Vodafone services and then they make money through trailing commissions? Or how? Because they don't have
That's how Crazy John used to work with Telstra. They used to get the trailing commissions as you speak. But
so every time you paid a phone bill, they got a small percentage of that as revenue.
And that's why Crazy John ended up in court, because he didn't think he was getting his fair share. And Telstra said, you are getting your fair share.
That's what the dispute was over.
I believe so, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I don't know how they work these days. I assume they buy it as a bulk lot, you know, and sell it off to individuals, so they'll be buying minutes of airtime.
Oh, we'll buy a million call minutes this month or something, and we'll get it as a subsidised rate, and we'll charge people this for it, and we'll make some money.
That's my assumption.
Okay, cool.
Another interesting bit of technological news, which is out this week too, is, well, you know how Google have got an interest in video, MySpace and all that sort of stuff.
And like YouTube.
They actually own YouTube now, if I recall. I think they bought one of those big guys. MySpace is going to take on YouTube, but Google's also got some interesting video or part of the universal search, where very shortly they'll probably start indexing videos. So if you're a web developer and all that sort of thing, it may pay very shortly to contemplate putting movies on your website, so it can be indexed and searched and things. Yeah, Google will. It's really the audio. It will work out. It's like what podcasting technology is too. You know, it'll pull the audio out and convert speech to text and then let you search on it, which is quite snazzy, I would have thought. But let's talk about MySpace.
MySpaceVideo.com. Is that the one?
Yeah, I must admit, I've had a fair bit of a laugh out of YouTube of recent times. I didn't think it was going to be as big as it was.
You
can
spend a lot of time there looking at funny stuff. It's great.
It is.
Spend a lot of bandwidth there.
You can. That's why you do it at work, Mark.
Yes. That's a good point, actually. You know, you look at these people in rural areas which don't have the bandwidth. Like, there was an email here from a listener tonight. Neil, it says, loud and clear via streaming, he was down in Phillip Island, I think, as he looks at it. Yeah, Phillip Island on a big pond, 52 kilobit per second dial-up, and had a few lossy bits and pieces here and there and everywhere.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for the reception report.
It's interesting. You mentioned bandwidth for those who are sort of can't quite cope with the high-speed bandwidth. It'd be most frustrating, I think, looking at YouTube and those sort of things. But, yes, it was very funny. I was just searching the net for something, and what did you call it? It's where you get distracted on the net.
Wilfing.
Wilfing.
What was I looking for?
Yes, well, I was off there being awfully distracted one night, and I came across some Doctor Who outtakes, which went for about 30 minutes or something like that. It was hilarious.
And you think, what have I done for the last 2.5 hours? This is the problem at work when you're supposed to be working. You come in the morning and...
No, don't have that problem.
No, read your emails, click on some links and...
Don't have time to be wilfing.
Gets to 11:30, you think, what the hell have I done today? Nothing at all.
It's a big distraction though, isn't it, when you think about it? But that's what I was saying, I've all these things that are popping up on YouTube and all that. So in addition, this is what MySpace aims to make its video sharing side more prominent with the launch of MySpaceTV.com. Now, this is social networking going to the next level, so heaven forbid what the young people of the world are going to see out there. In addition to user-created clips, the site will also deliver branded channels. MySpace recently reached an agreement with Sony to use clips from some of the 1980 sitcoms, including Different Strokes and things like that. So that's all going to start to appear on these MySpace. They're sort of going to become broadcasters in their own right in a lot of respects. Watch out. Commercial, like that's the whole program tonight, tying in with what Channel 7 are doing with TiVo and all that. Like Channel 9 and Channel 10. Channel 10's got the youth market, but I think Channel 9's a bit aimless at the moment. They're still targeting the crime fiction people. Well, there's a CSI on every 5 minutes on Channel 9 at the moment. But this is where we're going to go. So when you get your broadband, you'll be able to watch all these sort of programs. It'll be surprising if content from other parts of News Corporation, such as NBC Universal and Fox, because they own it, doesn't also appear on the site. So this is where we're going to go. We're going to get all this stuff dished up to us on sites like MySpace, which are going to compete with the free-to-airs and that sort of stuff. Well, and Foxtel, I guess, in particular, they're going to do Different Strokes and things like that. So, Dr. Ryan, what are your experiences with the MySpace, apart from social networking and even YouTube for that? Do you use it frequently? I know you said you can waste a lot of bandwidth there, so you must use it.
You can. Where I've used it in my personal application is if I'm writing a blog. Like we're experimenting with a blog with our new little puppy that we got as a
young Tess.
Young Tess, that's right, little golden retriever. And we've got a blog called Tess the Puppy, and we're putting photos there. And I said to my wife, you can actually take videos with that camera, and you can.
She didn't believe you, right?
No, she did. No, she does an excellent job. She takes little videos.
Oh, good.
And I said, you can put these online as well. She said, how do I do that? I said, well, put them somewhere like YouTube, and then link to the video in YouTube on the blog, so people can see the little embedded...
Embed your picture in your blog.
That's right, this little thumbnail of the video there in the blog. I can click on it and it plays the video.
I've never uploaded. Is it easy?
Very, very easy. They make it extremely easy, and it's very fast, too. It's a
what
great
do you need?
Service. In terms of...
Do you need, like, to make a movie, or do you just grab something off
no,
your camera, or
well,
how does
what we
it
do
work?
Is we just take the movie file, which is an MPEG file, out of the camera, just as you would the... photos, just as you copy the JPEG images out of a camera, you copy the MPEG movie file, put it on your hard disk somewhere, or leave it in your camera. Just click on the browse button in your web browser when you go to YouTube and click upload.
Do you need an account?
Yeah, you set up an account, set up a free account.
Okay. And MySpace will be just the same as this too, obviously.
Yeah, it is. And I think the only limitation is that you can't have one single file exceeding a certain file size. Like, it might be 100 megabytes or something per file, but there's no actual limit on number of files you can have. So it's stopping people from blatantly pirating movies, but it means that you can have an extensive personal video collection online.
They just put music video clips up there instead and all the copyrighted okay. music. Mark, have you ever used it?
Do that instead.
YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've used it a few times. So people send me links in emails these days and say, oh, yeah, have you seen this one sort of thing? I think we might have talked about one or two on Tech Talk before, some humorous stuff out there and some interesting stuff, even talking about the radio direction finding we've had. There was one up there where you actually had to go and radio direction find control and then come back and scull a beer in Germany and then go out and find the next one. So can imagine what you're like by the time you get to the fifth one.
Fairly happy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Speaking of Germany, here's something that came out of field.
There's just synchronization tonight with everything.
I was saving this for later, but
everything
you've
links
given me
to everything.
Beautiful segue. Google threatens to pull out of Gmail in Germany. Did you hear about this?
Sorry, I didn't hear anything you just said the last 8 seconds.
Yeah, I know. That's good. I'll say it again for those of you who didn't listen.
Thank you.
Google threatens to pull out Gmail out of Germany, so you won't be able to log on as Gmail.
Why are they threatening to do that?
Legislation. Too much people knowing too much about you and not sharing information and data. The legislation before that word there would require telecommunications providers to collect and retain personally identifiable data.
Ooh.
So it's all secrecy and privacy and stuff like that. So, yes, it was just a by-the-by type sort of thing.
Mm.
Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to find out about the CDMA revolution and when it's going to end, if it's on track, and all that with Mark.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to the panel, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins. Now, Mark, you know all these things about CDMA and being a person who used to work for that company. What's going on with the CDMA close down? Is it still going to happen as scheduled, when it's going to happen, or what?
Yeah, no, it's still planned to close officially in early 2008. I can't give you anything more accurate than that. I don't think they actually know, and I don't think, you know, there's been an official internal date bandied round as yet, but everything's on track.
So what's going to happen? They're just going to turn it off, turn the power off. Is that really what happens, or is there...
Pretty much so, yeah. Look, they will do some changes to some of the sites. They will use some of the antennas that CDMA are using, which are like better antennas because they might be higher up a tower or something, and they'll put the new NextG, which is a wideband CDMA network, onto those better antennas, if you like. So there is some compromises where they've got towers at the moment where they're not allowed to put another antenna up because of local government regulations or structural limitations. The tower can't handle another panel on top of it because of wind loading and things like that. So they will take advantage. And so they're using some interim solutions at the moment, which they will unbundle and undo again when they've got the CDMA network switched off, and then they can put wideband CDMA on those antennas.
Now, the government's put in some fairly stringent, I guess, rules and regulations about the changeover. Are the telephone companies meeting that?
Yeah, so that's currently where they're sitting at. Most of the net, pretty much I wouldn't like to say 100%, but it's very, very close to 100% has been rolled out now. What's actually happening is that the provider for Telstra is actually driving, you know, I think they've done over 25,000 kilometres around Australia.
Because it's all subbed out, isn't it? Telstra get the provider these days, or the hardware manufacturer, is that right?
That's right.
And set it all up, yep.
Yep, so it's a turnkey system sort of being sold to Telstra. And that provider is actually driving thousands of kilometres to show that the coverage is the same as CDMA. Now, once they've done that, then Telstra are also doing their own driving on top of that for certain areas.
So they're doing a backup of the backup or just
so keeping or they'll be driving them slightly different areas or areas they might have had problems with in the past with CDMA, and they want to make sure that NextG is just as good, you know, and that sort of thing. And then on top of that again, the government's got their own group through the Australian Communications and Media Authority who are also driving the network to prove that it's okay. So Telstra sort of got a are in the middle, if you like. They've got to accept what
So there's three parties on the road checking that the network is better than what currently is in place, really, is that? That's what it comes down to.
That's pretty much what it comes down to, yes. I mean, they're all slightly checking for different things, and but pretty much checking for the end result to be the same, yeah. So the provider's actually checking sites where they know that there's limitations and seeing if there's any difference that is noticeable to the customer. You know, where there's difference where we can't use the antenna, the same antenna, because one's on one side of the tower and one's on the other. Does that cause a problem? Yes or no? Let's go and drive it and find out.
The biggest test, I guess, is that farmer in the paddock where he can make a phone call at the moment. If he can't make a phone call when the new network changes over, that's when the telcos are going to get the phone calls, and no doubt the senator will at the same time, saying,
yeah,
what's going exactly on?
And the same thing happened when AMPS closed down. You know, there was the same sort of thing between AMPS and CDMA.
Well, this is it. This poor farmer had a perfectly good analog phone with an 018 number, you know, mm-hmm. a few years ago, and he got told, no, that's going to get turned off. You've got to buy a CDMA phone. And he's had that for a few years, and now he's being told he has to, that's going to get turned off too, and he has to upgrade
again.
Absolutely,
yep, that's right. And there's different ways of checking network performance. So you've got whether your phone says it's in service or not. The second one,
because you can have service but low signal strength, but not necessarily make a call.
Exactly. So that's the second one: wet mobile originate, mobile terminate, as they call it. So you, okay, it says you've got service, but can you actually make a call at that spot?
Are there time slots available on the tower?
They don't have time slots in CDMA and wide out in CDMA. So that's more a capacity issue sort of thing, and it's not related to that. It's more about. You've got a sniff of signal and your mobile phone said, yes, you've got service, but when you actually try and access the network and talk to it, can you actually get your message through to say, I want to make a call?
Right. So you're looking at error rates and things like that?
Yeah, error rates, that sort of thing. Yep. So, and then the third part is sort of related to more about your transmit power of your mobile phone, what it's capable of doing, and comparing it to CDMA. So there's some differences at the moment where some of the new handsets, because they're all new sleek, and we talked about this at the start of the show, all the new handsets are like flip phones. And some of the antennas are actually in the part that you hold, not in the flip part, if that makes sense. So people are covering over the antenna. So one side's their head, the other side's their hand, and they're actually reducing the amount of signal into their phone and out of it, of course, and it's making a difference to their coverage. Telstra's actually got 1,000 antennas made up where you can...
A bad difference.
A bad difference, yes. Yep, so Telstra's actually got 1,000 antennas made up which you can plug into one of the phones that they use for their, what they call fringe coverage ones, you know, and it's actually making a huge difference and actually surpasses CDMA when they plug this external antenna onto the back of the phone sort of thing. So Telstra recognised that the phones have changed over time, you know, and there's a lot of still CDMA phones out there with pull-out antennas, which were the flavour, and they weren't flip, but, you know, back, and they work just right, so... The new Telstra is actually asking some of their suppliers to bring out a phone with a pull-out antenna.
Right.
So that they can match coverage that way.
Well, that's a good idea, really, when you think about it. Because you need every bit of, you know, gain that you need if you're in the rural areas just to make sure you can get your signal back through to the base station.
That's right. And you've got to compare like with like, you know, so the phones have got to be doing the same sort of thing.
So what do you reckon? Betting man on track? It's all going to happen smoothly?
Yeah, still working on it. And there's obviously a lot of known issues which they're going through at the moment. So the network's been rolled out. They know that this site doesn't match that. You know, the coverage doesn't match here and there because of a design issue, which they knew they would have had to have gone back anyway. So pretty much what they're finding is what they already knew about, and they're fixing those things up. And I think it's still on track for early next year to be switched off.
The one thing I've noticed about NextG, when it drops out, it really drops out. It's unlike the old traditional where you could someone was getting a bit scratchy and a bit noisy and you could tell that, oh, I'll just move a bit. You don't get that opportunity with NextG. It's either you're there or you're not.
Yeah, no, there was a thing called a sudden call dropout scenario, which I think you've experienced and I've experienced.
Everyone's experienced it, yes.
And I was looking into that from a Telstra side of thing when I was with Telstra, and they, I think the vendor was having trouble trying to capture it, you know, if you're like trying to find it. They had
intermittent
reports.
Faults are the best ones to find,
yeah,
aren't they?
That's, yeah, that's right, sort of thing. But they had to capture it with their test equipment so they could analyze it, sort of thing. And eventually they got it, and we had to devise some new software to actually look for where how to do it.
Yes.
And then a new network was being launched in Finland, I think, which didn't have any customers on it. So they took it over there and found that they could actually reproduce it over there. And they were going to use that network where they could try a whole lot of different things so they could change a whole lot of parameters without upsetting customers because it wasn't a launched network.
Isn't that fantastic, having a country with an entire telephone network with no customers on it? That'd be ideal. That's
like, is that what was in Finland?
Well, it's amazing.
Very few complaints.
Yeah, no different to NextG before it was launched. You know, a whole lot of base stations on air.
Yeah, that's right.
But the only people who got phones are
Network engineers.
Yeah, network
and that's
engineers,
about it.
Yeah. So, you know, before they launch it, there's an opportune time there to try a whole lot of different things. So that's the last I heard before I left Telstra.
All right. Well, we'll find out a little bit more as time gets closer. Thank you, Mark. That was, I guess, what we're sort of expecting, really, in a lot of respects. It's all on track. So, Dr. Ron, I just want to briefly talk to you before we go to the break about EXIF data. What on earth is EXIF data?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Andrew. EXIF data, you know how with an audio file like a podcast. Now, I play...
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Okay. I'm giving you an example I'm trying to draw an analogy here. We've got the podcast, and when I look at that on my iPod or my music player, it comes up with a little Tech Talk Radio logo, and it says artist, Tech Talk Radio, and track name, and all that information.
We agonize about putting those on our MP3 files.
Really, the agony is like can't be described. that's all that information is embedded inside the audio file.
Yes.
The same happens with JPEG files. I didn't know if you knew this or not. But if you take a picture with a fairly modern digital camera, there's a lot of information that is contained within the image file itself. And this data is called exchangeable image file data, or EXIF data.
Yeah, Adobe Bridge is really good at pulling all that out and displaying it to you on the screen.
Ah, so you can view it. Well,
your shutter speed, who took it, whether your flash was on.
Yeah, exactly.
The date, the time, the exposure, the camera.
Your focal length and your exposure compensation, and if the flash was used, and the time zone that you're in, if you've set that in your camera. All this information is contained within a lot of the images that are now being taken by new digital cameras. Also, as you say, if you edit the image with something like Adobe Photoshop, for example, you can see the version of Adobe Photoshop that was used that last did the edit on the image. Now, if you are a user of the file sharing site Flickr, which we talked about earlier in the program, if you take a photo with your camera, you put it up on Flickr, you click on a link that says additional information. It's like on the right-hand side of the screen after you've uploaded a photo, and under additional information, if I put photos up there that I've taken with my Casio, it says this photo was taken with a Casio EXZ55, and you can click on a more properties link. And then if you click on more properties link, you've got
Exhibit A,
a page of information with things like the orientation of the camera, resolution, the software version, the date and time, as you say, whether the flash was turned on or off.
What was your focal length when you were flashing?
I can tell you, Mark. It's all here in black and white. I'll track it down. It's in...
All right, murmur. That's exactly right, yes.
But you've got all that information. If you're interested in having a look at that and you're using a site like Flickr, for example, have a look at the additional information there. It's amazing what's contained.
But it's a valid point, too, because if you're snapping away, as you say, and you forget... Because I do, and digital cameras are the bad thing about this. You can take more photos because it's digital. You think, I'll just take another one, and another one, and another one. Next thing you know, you're downloading 120 photos.
So this is a bit like a digital fingerprint in some respects too, isn't it? Because that sort of information says where it came from, what time it was taken, and
yes,
you know, it's sort of embedded inside it.
It is. It didn't actually have something as blatant there, Mark, as an electronic serial number of the camera, but there's no reason why manufacturers couldn't embed that information in the image if they wanted to.
Mm. Yep. Mm. All right, thank you. We now know about EXIF files, which is just dandy. We can all go and check them out and use them and read them. They're good.
Have a look at that data.
We actually use them quite a bit at work. They're good because it does tell you when you took the photo and all that sort of stuff. We should talk about RAW photos one day too. That'd be a very interesting topic.
Oh, is that a whole show?
Yeah, no, not quite, but we should talk. I'll get a photographer and we can talk about RAW stuff.
Let's do it.
Be very good. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a...
This week we've been talking about media sensors, we've been talking about TiVos, Foxtel IQs and all sorts of gadgets. There is one other device we didn't mention, this is the Gadget of the Week. It's a media streamer. A media streamer is simply a wireless interface to your television and your stereo, so you can connect your TV and your stereo to your network.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. This week's gadget is the Philips SLM5500 wireless media streamer. It lets you watch video stored on your PC, on your television, in your lounge room, and also lets you stream music, yeah, and set up slideshows and all sorts of good stuff.
So you basically have a wireless interface, and then it comes out as like component or something like that, does it?
That's exactly right, yeah. It's just a wireless interface that outputs audio and video, Mark. That's spot on. Now, this little unit from Philips, the front is, has a little single button to turn the unit on and off. It's got a series of LEDs that indicate what it's up to. There are, at the rear, there are SCART and component video outputs. That's the technical talk for what the
SCART's
video format.
SCART's good. I like SCART.
Good. You like SCART?
Yeah,
you're a fan?
You get good quality stuff out of SCART. You can get some bad quality stuff too, but normally it's good.
But SCART's normally good. Audio is taken care of by a digital coaxial socket.
Oh, good. Into your surround sound system.
Exactly, while a wireless antenna and Ethernet socket complete the ensemble. So if you haven't got wireless, if you've got a 100 meg Ethernet port nearby, you can plug it into that.
Oh, that's, Adam would be happy.
He would. Yeah, it's got Ethernet. Yes, he will be a big fan. Now, it's got a good remote control. It supports a range of video, including MPEG 1 and 2, Windows Media, including High Def, DivX and XVID.
How much? How much? I'm waiting for the price tag.
$399 Australian dollars.
Oh, good. Where do I get one from? That's just exactly what I need.
There you go. Australia's T3 Gadget Magazine gave it 5 stars with a rave review. So for $399, pick yourself up a Philips media streamer.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The Revision 3 TV network distributes popular audio and video podcasts like things we've spoken about on the show before, Dig Nation, The Totally Red Show, and Accelerator TV. On System, which is a video podcast this week, the iPhone has been cracked.
Yes, you were talking about this earlier on. Cracked literally,
that's
haven't it?
It? Literally cracked. Revision3.com/system, SYSTM/cracked. You can watch the program's host's...
As a man holds up his thing, don't do that. What did they do?
Well, they
what did you see?
The program's hosts are stress tested a brand new iPhone. They got it out of the box, out of the shop. They opened it up and said, what happens if I go to put the iPhone in my top shirt pocket and I accidentally drop it on the ground? And they did. And it went
and what
smash.
Happened? Oh, good.
Shattered the display. They then opened it up and they were trying so tactfully to open it to have a look inside. And the host, David Randolph, stuck a screwdriver into the battery pack and let the smoke out.
Oh, no, you don't do that.
Funny.
No.
So if you want half an hour of a funny video looking
I do.
At
where's this?
The inside
this on YouTube,
of an iPhone. No, it's Revision 3. Revision3.com/system/cracked. And we'll put a link there on our website.
That'd be good. Good. All right, so where else did they try? Like, this was just really to see if, like, you know, general day-to-day usage, like you and I would drop our phone.
Yeah.
You know, when you get out of the car and it hits the ground and the bitumen and all that sort of stuff. And this is really what they were trying to do.
So what happens if I drop an iPhone on the road by accident? Is it going to put a dent in it? Is it going to scratch? Is it going to completely destroy itself?
And the winner was an iPhone, obviously.
Well, no, they also got their car keys and they scratched the display with their car keys. Because if you put your mobile phone in your pocket...
Yeah, well, you scratch it, don't you?
You scratch it. Or you got a loose chain.
Get
or
a clam.
Something.
That's what you need clams for. Yes. I love clams for that very reason.
The
all right.
Clamshell phone. So, yeah, that's the website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
you know that sinking feeling you get when you've been on annual leave, you've been away from the office for 3 weeks, and you come into your work computer at 9 o'clock on Monday and you start your email?
Only
1,300 messages this morning.
Most of them are spam. Yeah,
work colleague, 1,200 this morning after 3 weeks.
You are kidding, 1,200.
1,200, that's 3 weeks off.
Internet legal visionary and writer for Wired.com, Lawrence Lessig, hit upon a novel tactic after spending 80 hours 1 week trying to clear out his backlogged inbox. He simply surrendered by declaring email bankruptcy.
And deleted it all, did he?
He said, bankruptcy is now my only option. He wrote this in a mass message to his correspondence creditors. He's a vocal anti-spam crusader, and ironically, his email problems were caused for the most part by personal legitimate messages. So you can declare email bankruptcy if your inbox is too full. You don't know what to do. Don't lose sleep. Don't despair.
Or just blame it on Microsoft and say your computer crashed and you lost it.
Yeah, I lost it. Blame it on Thunderbird, maybe. Yeah,
Thunderbird, that's a good one. I must admit, when I came in tonight before, I logged in via FTP and deleted all the spam before I downloaded it onto the laptop here, so...
That's the thing. Lessig receives an average of 200 non-spam emails a day and still seems to intend to respond to all future emails. At the same time, he's
just
obviously relieved.
Resend them again.
A few have simply resent their email, he said, but the vast majority have been kind enough to simply remain silent.
Fantastic.
That's
all right.
The odd spot.
You've been listening to Dr. Ron there doing the whole back end of the show all by himself single-handedly. You can do the whole thing next week. I think that's terrific.
I've been there, done that. Thanks very much.
Mark Diggins also joined us. Thank you for your insights into mobile communications tonight, Mark, and all the other comments as well. Next week, we'll return with a little bit more of the same, and we might even have a guest on soon. It's about time we had a guest anyway.
It is. Yeah, we'll do that.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Same time next week. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.